The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
In Mariupol, a Russian airstrike destroying a children's hospital and maternity ward. It's one of the largest Russian airstrikes since they invaded. The force of the blast leaving a crater stories deep. But the hospital was sparsely occupied. Even so, three people were killed, 17 wounded. President Zelensky tweeting videos showing the devastation inside the hospital, saying the attack is an atrocity and that people, children, were under the rubble. Mariupol was supposed to be under a ceasefire, where civilians were to be allowed to evacuate. But the city's been under a total siege for days, and attempts to rescue people have continually failed. All over the country, thousands are attempting to leave cities where fragile ceasefires exist again this morning. But these safe corridors have been repeatedly violated by the Russian military.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, good afternoon. Wow, I hate to start with such heavy news. I know the world has been shocked by what we are seeing. And as I read it, and we'll talk tomorrow with Congressman Chris Smith, potentially about war crimes. The Pentagon has not called anything a war crime yet, but when you have blasted 18 different hospitals, right, maternity wards, it does give you pause. Now, some might say, oh, maybe they were firing from those areas. I don't know. 18 hospitals, you look at residential areas that have been just leveled. It's a very dark and difficult situation for the Ukrainian people, and it's getting worse. Local authorities are hurrying right now to bury the dead, as you heard in that report. I've seen images of just a mass grave where bodies are being thrown into them. And, of course, the city sustained 9 days of bombardment yesterday. Even the bombing of a maternity ward, as we talked about. And this was agreed to be a safe passage corridor for civilians, and yet civilians are dying. Some of the images are quite gruesome. You know, I see dead bodies with suitcases next to them. These are people trying to flee. And I love what I heard in that piece of audio there, where there are services being offered for the dead. And I think that's so important. Again, you know, and this is not for any credit for myself. It's just, it's an invitation to you. I want you to do this too. You know, the Lord told St. Faustina that the Chaplet of Divine Mercy really is a prayer for the sick. It's a prayer for the dying. And you know, every moment, as I've often shared with you, I think 105 people a minute are called back to God. That's a lot of souls. So by the time we are done our program today, how many thousands of souls will be called back to the Lord? Every hour, 6,316 souls die. You know, so by the time I sign off, almost 20,000 people will have stood before the Lord. I mean, think about it, that's amazing. And this is every hour, 24 hours a day. It means that at every moment, there are 105 souls about to take their last breath. So I think it's so important that you and I pray. I mean, and again, I'm not saying this for any sort of personal credit. It's an invitation to you. Please pray the chaplet. Pray the chaplet of divine mercy for the sick and the dying. You know, pray that prayer. The Lord said, pray as much as you can for these types of souls. In that final moment, sometimes they don't have an opportunity to choose God. Right? Sometimes their life ends very quickly. Others, they struggle. And sometimes they don't have trust. And the Lord says that the grace of eternal salvation for certain souls in that final moment will depend on your prayers. You can join me today. And every day I want to do this. I want to pray for those who are dying, especially as we see this global conflict and it becomes much more visible to us. We'll do that in about an hour. The number, I don't have the exact data, but I was just doing the math in my head here. We were looking at about 152,000 people die each day. That's a lot of souls. So you can have a profound impact on these souls. And it's just, I'm grateful for the priests who are celebrating Mass and remembering those souls who are dying. And I'm grateful for whatever you can do, whether you pray the rosary or the chaplet or you spend time with the Lord. You know, the horror of that war continues, and it's relentless. What's happening to these citizens, from at least what we're seeing here, is horrific. The population of Mariupol is about 400,000 residents, and it's being mercilessly, if that's a word, if I can get that out of my mouth. What's the word I'm looking for here, Maggie? Mercilessly. Merciless? Merciless. Merciless. That's a tongue twister. It's just the Russians are mercilessly, if that's a word, just attacking. I can't seem to get that word out of my mouth. I saw a report in CNA, Catholic News Agency. They reported that the Archbishop over there, he actually called the Russians. He says what they're doing is mass murder. It's mass murder. And, you know, it's hard not to agree with him. You know, yesterday is you know, the audio you heard, reports of maternity ward being hit. They said the bomb blast in front of that thing was just, it was huge. It was massive. That's the 17th hospital to be attacked. Yeah, is it an anomaly? Is it a misfire? Or is it a serious war crime? You know, I think it's a war crime. We'll talk, as I said, tomorrow to a congressman about this who wants to hold Vladimir Putin accountable for this. And I won't go into the details of some of the other things that are happening over there. Just it's horrific. Another cause for concern for Ukraine, and you might have heard a little bit about this, biological laboratories. Have you followed this story or not? There have been recent reports that show that there are, I think, 4,000 biological laboratories in that country. I was shocked when I saw that. I didn't realize there were that many. And there are two that operate at the very highest level, meaning that they work with some of the most dangerous pathogens known to man. Like nuclear weapons, I wish we'd get rid of these bioweapons as well. It's so easy for something to go wrong. Some of the other labs, I think 400 of them work with slightly less dangerous things, and there are others that work with stuff down the scale. But even those things in those 400 labs, they're nasty. HIV, hepatitis, salmonella. Some of those labs are working with COVID-19, tuberculosis, yellow fever, West Nile, SARS. I mean, you name it. So if those labs get hit, this is the only reason I'm throwing this out to you. If the lab gets hit, it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination how bad this thing can turn. And we know they turned off the energy to Chernobyl, right? If something was to go wrong there, you know how bad things can get. So it's obvious from where I sit, at least, that we need to pray more than ever. We need to sacrifice and fast more than ever. We're at a critical moment. This thing can get much larger. And things can get out of control. And accidents can happen, too, things that are not intended. Right now, President Biden is in negotiations with Iran, and he's using Russia as a mediator. And if the reports we're seeing are correct, it looks like Iran is going to, they're going to walk away from the table in this, Iran deal 2.0, getting even more than they ever expected. The Senate Republicans have gathered together in the last 24 hours. They voiced their concern about this new deal. And here's what they had to say. Listen.
There may be no part of the globe more dangerous in the Biden foreign policy than Iran. From the first days of this administration, the Biden foreign policy team set as its top foreign policy goal to negotiate a brand new nuclear agreement with Iran.
Look, any dispute can be settled by two parties if there's two things present. You only need two things. Number one, you need a common objective. And number two, you need to have parties acting in good faith. You have neither with the Iranians. Their objective is to have a nuclear weapon. Our objective is, and the world's objective is, that they do not have a nuclear weapon. Now, they will do what they have to do to get there.
We should not go back into a deal with Iran. We got out of that. We should never go back to a deal with Iran. My colleague spoke about the negotiation and how this deal has been put together. It is the Russians who are doing the negotiations on behalf of the United States. You turn on the TV, the radio, anything, you see what the Russians are doing in Ukraine. How in the world can we allow them to be negotiating on our behalf? And what did the Russian envoy talk about this negotiation? This is his quote. He said, Iran got much more than it could expect. Much more. Well, why do you think it got much more? Because the Russians made sure Iran got much more. And now they're bragging about how they took the United States to the cleaners.
Yeah, I mean, that's what strikes me the most. Where's common sense? I mean, this is silly. The Russians are negotiating for us because Iran doesn't want to talk. They're going to be walking away with far more than they ever expected. We're talking billions of dollars. Their leaders have sanctions. They're going to have them these sanctions that we had against them removed. The Revolutionary Guard is going to be removed from the U.S. list of foreign terrorists. There could even be more payments to them. So, look, I'm not a diplomat, but to me, that is not exactly a winning strategy. I don't get it. In the meantime, the House has passed the omnibus, I am really having trouble articulating today, the omnibus budget bill. All right, it's going to be a long day for me. It's worth about $1.5 trillion, right? A lot of money. The vote came only a few hours after the negotiations, were finished. They dotted the I's, they crossed the T's. It's a 2,400-page bill, big bill, sent to the Senate. They apparently are going to vote on it without really being the chance to read it. So the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, remember what she said last time there was a major bill like that when the health care bill was about to pass? Oh, you got to pass the bill to find out what's in it. I was having a conversation earlier about this. I'm thinking, how the heck can you pass a bill like that when there's no time really to read it? Why would you vote on it? But that's where we are right now. Hey, coming up in just a second, Patrick Kelly is going to join us. Before I do that, I want to share with you a piece of audio that I have seen. And again, just to give you a sense of what's happening on the ground in the Ukraine right now. There are a lot of innocents that are being targeted. They're being shot at. They're being hit, whether it's maternity wards or in some cases, even journalists. I heard some audio the other day. This comes from Sky News. And I'll tell you what, it's harrowing. That's the word to use. There's a little audio that you can get a sense for. I'll try to paint the scene for you. There's a group of journalists. They're making their way. They were near Kyiv, I believe, and they came under attack. They kept shouting that they were journalists. They had flak jackets on. They were taking fire. Here's part of what happened. Again, under attack by Russian forces. Listen.
But the government has warned for days of Russian saboteurs who've infiltrated the country to bring terror. Death squads who are attacking civilians in their cars as they flee. They do exist, as we found out.
That's a bullet.
Whoa! Stop! Where is everyone?
Here.
Stop!
We think it's a
British
Ukrainian checkpoint and a mistake, so we identify ourselves.
British journalists! Journalists!
Somehow we have to get out of this, but the rounds keep coming. It's a professional ambush.
Ow.
The bullets just don't miss.
Whoa!
Where can we go? Can we crawl down the embankment?
Andre! Whoa!
And it goes on and on. They had to make a run for it. Ultimately, they slipped down the side of an embankment coming under fire. They took shots. They had flak jackets. They had bulletproof vests. Two of them were hit, but unbelievably, as strange as this is, those journalists, and I think there were five of them, made it to the bottom, they regrouped, and they just could not believe that they were alive. They were in shock, but I'll tell you what, they were elated to be alive. It's a miracle that they got out, but very compelling audio. Some of what's happening, my hat off to many journalists who are going over to the war-ravaged nation right now of Ukraine and giving you an honest view of what's coming back. Some, like innocent civilians, coming under fire. So, with this continuing war in Ukraine, the refugee numbers, they just keep going up. And yesterday, you heard from a couple of people who are on the ground in Poland and Slovakia who are helping out more than the 2 million people who are now fleeing there, most of whom are women and children. The men between 18 and 60 have been told, you can't leave, you got to stay, and they've been conscripted into service. If you didn't hear those interviews, you can go to the podcast, second hour of the show yesterday, and listen to it. Poland right now is bearing the brunt of these refugees. They have more than 1 million of them. A little piece of news you may not have heard. The European Parliament yesterday overwhelmingly voted to ask the European Commission to impose economic sanctions, not on Russia, but on Poland and Hungary, because those two countries won't play along with the woke EU policies. And that vote came after more than a million refugees have entered Poland. Fortunately, there's some help for Poland. The Knights of Columbus are present there. And I know you see the great work that they do, not only in our country, they do it around the world. They're committed to some substantial help right now for the Ukrainian refugees in Poland. And the Supreme Knight of the Knights of Columbus, Peter Kelly, joins me today. And I ask you to do this before I talk to, Patrick Kelly. Let me, I call him Peter again. I'm not in my right mind today. Patrick Kelly, who's the Supreme Knight of the Knights of Columbus. You can find them online, knightsofcolumbus.org. That's KFC.org, KFC.org. If you can get behind them, if you can support them, if you can help their efforts, they are helping the Ukrainian refugees in Poland and doing a lot of good here stateside. Patrick, thank you for your time. It's good to have you with us.
Yes, hi, Drew. Thank you very much for having me. It's really great to be with you this afternoon.
Well, look, I want to thank you for your great work. I was traveling over the weekend. I saw signs for the Knights of Columbus where I was. I know you do stuff internationally, and I understand that the Knights have committed $1 million to refugee relief. You've raised, I think, $5 million. Right? So explain to us a little bit about what your efforts are. Where's the money going? How can we help?
Yes. So initially, when Russia invaded, right out of the gate, we decided to put in $1 million from our national headquarters and then do an effort to have members of the Knights and others to contribute. And I have to say, the response that we have gotten it's been outstanding. I mean, we have raised, as of this morning, we've raised $3.5 million. And then we, Knights of Columbus headquarters, are putting in another $1.5 million.
Wow.
For a total of $5
million. Wow.
And we're doing it to get food and supplies and winter jackets and medical supplies to these refugees, the millions of refugees that are streaming across the border, because our heart breaks for them. And as you have described in the program today, it's a very harrowing situation. I think it's something that none of us have ever seen this in our lifetimes, a ground war in Europe. So what we're doing is we've set up what we're calling mercy huts on the Polish side of the border. And what it is it's refugees come across the border. They come to these mercy huts, and it gives them time, shelter. They get warmed up. They have some food, and then they move on to meet with relatives or others in Poland. And we have members of the Knights working those huts. So we're doing that, but we also have trucks going from the eastern border of Poland into Ukraine, delivering supplies. And those are regular. Those are regular trucks that we have going in to deliver these supplies. So it really is. It's an extraordinary situation that we're facing.
It's fantastic. Thank you for doing that. I'm curious, what are you hearing from your councils? I understand that you have KFC councils in Poland and Ukraine.
Yeah, we do. We have KFC councils in both countries. And what we are hearing is there's a tremendous sense of solidarity, and I would say brotherhood, with these councils. And it's particularly with the Polish Knights of Columbus are really stepping up and helping tremendously with their Ukrainian brothers and Ukrainian families. So there's a tremendous sense of solidarity and unity. And really, I would say it's a defining moment. I mean, and if the history of the Knights of Columbus has been defined in many ways by how we have acted in times of great crisis in World War I and World War II. And I think we're seeing another moment where there's courage and bravery going on in the face of this aggression. And so it really is a very heartening thing to see.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We're going to put up right now, and if you want to help the Knights, if you want to get behind the effort, we're going to post the Knights of Columbus Ukraine donation page on our Twitter right now. So you can go to @DrewMarianiShow. And if you're following us on Twitter already, click on that link. It'll take you over there. Of course, as I was saying, please check out the Knights of Columbus page. You'll find a lot of great information there as well. So you found ways to get humanitarian supplies into Ukraine. I know it's becoming increasingly difficult to get into the country as Russian forces are closing off a lot of passages. I don't want to give away any secrets, but I'm assuming there's a lot of risk to do this. I mean, what are the conditions like? How are you able to do that?
Well,
I don't
want
to give your secrets away either. So let me just say
yeah,
that.
Sure. I sure won't, but we're able to do it because we have people on the ground, Ukrainians and Poles, who just they know the land and they know how to operate. So actually having people who are there really makes a huge difference. It's not like we are kind of coming in, with a map and trying to figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah.
So that has really been an extraordinary thing. I would also say, we're working very closely with both the Ukrainian Eastern Catholic Church, the Greek-Ukrainian Catholic Church, and the Latin Rite. And I spoke with both of the archbishops in charge of those churches, Archbishop Shevchuk and Archbishop Mokshitsky, earlier. And, it was very, very inspiring to hear them talking about what they're facing and the courage that they are meeting this with. Archbishop Shevchuk, he said, basically, this is a war against simple people. He said, simple people are being bombed. Maternity hospitals are being bombed, schools and houses. And he asked me in particular to convey the truth of the situation, to do everything we can to get the word out about what's really happening there. And so, Drew, this is what you're doing on your program, so thank you for that.
No, I'm delighted. And speaking of the Archbishop, I saw, I'll share what he quoted here, too, and I like your perspective. He says, yesterday we saw horrific scenes of the bombarding of a maternity ward, as well as scenes of mass graves, common burials, where hundreds of lifeless bodies are laid to rest. Since the time of Nazism and Stalin's repression, Ukraine has not seen such mass burials in common graves without honor and without Christian prayer. And I know another priest fleeing the area, he says Mariupol is like Armageddon. He called it hell. The whole town is like a battlefield. It's really, I think, unimaginable. It's kind of hard, Patrick, for Americans to really get a sense for how bad it is over there. No power, no water, no food, the threat of death, PTSD, I'm sure, is rampant right now amongst so many people. We watch our TV and then we shut it off and we're back to the safety of our home. From a spiritual perspective, is the USCCB, teaming up with you? And where's the church in all this? And what can we do here to continue to help your efforts?
Yeah, well, I do know that the USCCB is doing a national collection this coming Sunday for Ukraine. So I think that's a way that every Catholic could assist. I know the Holy Father just sent an emissary over to Kyiv and to meet with Archbishop Shevchuk and Archbishop Mokshitsky. But, you're absolutely right, Drew. I mean, there's a tremendous darkness. I mean, the only way you can really fathom this kind of destruction is just the powers of darkness. And what we have to do is we have to do everything we can do to try to bring light and to try to bring assistance and to try to bring Christ into this terrible situation.
Amen to that. Let me take a quick call, and we have a few moments left. A question coming out of Nevada for you. Stan is joining us. Stan, good afternoon. It's good to have you on the air with us. You're on the air with Patrick Kelly, Supreme Knight.
Well, I'd like to thank the Supreme Good Supreme Knight. I'm a Knights of Columbus member, fourth degree out in Nevada, and just transferred her from California, and I happen to donate to that fund. So thank you for your good work. My question is that I keep thinking about what happened. I think the Knights were doing some work with Nivoth in the Middle East to help rebuild some things there, and the UN was involved, and the UN was basically taking all of this money and fingering it for certain groups, for Muslims or denying Christians. And if I recall right, Vice President Mike Pence had to step in, and they had to work with the Knights of Columbus to make sure that that money was being distributed. My question is, do you expect any interference from the UN or from this administration? If I heard Kamala Harris right this morning, she said that they were going to give humanitarian aid to the United Nations, the United States was. So that was my big concern. Do you expect any interference? Do you anticipate it? And what do you guys, are you prepared to, how are you prepared to deal with that?
Thank you, Stan.
Yeah, thanks very much for the question. You know, we don't expect that kind of interference precisely because we're working directly with the church, right, on the ground. So I think the kind of government aid that you're talking about, Stan, and kind of UN aid, I think we're going to be able to steer clear from any, you know, any kind of interference in that way. And, you know, so I think we'll be good there. I really don't think it will be a problem.
Well, I want to thank you, Patrick, again for your time today and how valuable it is. And I'm also grateful for the great work that the Knights of Columbus do. I've got to leave it right here, but let me just give you final thoughts for those who are listening.
Yeah, my final thought is this. I mean, many of us feel really helpless about this situation. You know, we're watching it on TV and it's heartbreaking. But I would say there's a very real concrete thing you can do. First thing is to pray. But second thing is to go to kfc.org, yeah, the Knights of Columbus website, and all click right on the button and help us in this effort.
Thank you.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The bill also proposes a revision of the fetal murder and manslaughter statute that would serve to handcuff the investigation of infant deaths unrelated to abortion. In other words, this bill will effectively legalize infanticide. The exact language of the bill states, quote, "This section may not be construed to authorize any form of investigation or penalty for a person experiencing a perinatal death related to a failure to act." Emphasis added. In other words, a baby born alive and well could be abandoned and left to starve or freeze to death. That's what perinatal death refers to. And nothing could be done to punish those who participated in that cruel death.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's just stunning. You know what that reminds me of? You know, nothing can be done. You would let the child starve or freeze to death. In the times of ancient Rome, if you had a child, let's say it was born, you couldn't afford it or had some sort of birth defect or whatever it might be, they would take the children, lay them in the gutters outside their homes, and the child would die from exposure. That's what we're seeing today. Are we the modern Rome? There's a bill in Maryland right now that, even though it doesn't explicitly say in the bill, it seems that it will allow for doctors to kill a child born. Now, listen to this. I can't get my head around it. I had to read this about 10 times to make sure that what I was reading was accurate. Doctors can kill an already born child up to 28 days. 28 days after its birth. And you're thinking, that's got to be wrong. No way. 28 days? You know, a partial birth. Abortion's one thing. You know, you can almost see how somebody can be so confused. I don't. Whether the child is partially out of the womb or alive for 28 days. Why 28 days? Why not 60? Why not a year? I mean, what's with 28 days, right? You're killing a human being. Senate Bill 669, which euphemistically is called the Pregnant Persons Freedom Act of 2022. Who doesn't want a Pregnant Persons Freedom Act, right? Don't you love that? Pregnant Persons Freedom Act of 2022. Reproductive justice, you know, choice. I mean, it's all these wonderful, liberating, clean, sanitized type of titles. As I often say, it's just whitewashing a corrupt, decaying tomb. Death. But they called it the Pregnant Persons Freedom Act of 2022. It has a provision in it. It prohibits investigations and criminal prosecutions for women and medical professionals for a, quote, failure to act in relationship to a perinatal death. So no real definition for perinatal in Maryland law right now. you know, 20th to 28th week of gestation, 1 to 4 weeks after birth. So this bill would prohibit any kind of legal investigation into criminal prosecution. For instance, a mother who abandons her child, let's say in a dumpster, a doctor who doesn't think the child should live or just leaves it on the table in the room to die, puts it in a closet, no problem. It's twisted. That's the madness. That's the darkness of our day. I want to give you the Maryland switchboard, all right? If you want to, call. I know you may not be a citizen of Maryland, but let them know. I say we flame them. I think we melt their phone lines. We tell them, what, are you crazy? You know, the number is this. Just say, hey, look, life needs to be respected from the moment of conception through natural death. This is sinister. It's dark. And there's consequence for this type of decision. There is. Sin has consequences. The number is 800-492-7122. That's the Maryland Legislation Switchboard. 1-800-492-7122. And I'm sorry I'm getting emphatic. I'm sorry I'm getting fired up about this, but this is the insanity of our day. If I saw a child laying in a gutter, I'd pick it up and try to make sure it was protected and fed and cared for, whether it's in ancient Rome or whether it's in the year 2022. That's where we are. On the international level, and Maggie and I were talking about this yesterday, the World Health Organization issued a 210-page guidance yesterday called Abortion Care Guideline. And just final thought, we're going to be joined by a great pro-life hero here in a second. His name's Sean Carney. Right, you know, when you see this title, again, I just want to hit this point because words have meaning. They do. I love words. Abortion Care Guideline. When you hear that right there, you know something is wrong because abortion is not care, right? Abortion's not care. The guideline calls for no gestational limit on abortion, an end to requirements that only a doctor do abortions. What the heck, right? No parental consent for minors. Your 15-year-old is being abused and pregnant. No consent from the parent. No waiting periods, no, and they want active promotion of abortion, including do-it-yourself abortions by governments. I mean, I'm actually speechless over what we're seeing unfold right now. It is only getting more sinister. It's only getting darker. Sean Carney is president, CEO of 40 Days for Life. They have the solution. And that's why I'm bringing them here, because I really believe that what they do has profound impact. You know, they're the founder of 40 Days for Life, and what they do is they believe in the power of prayer and fasting. Check them out, 40daysforlife.com, 40daysforlife.com. It is prayer and fasting that will defeat this evil. By the way, be sure to sign up there. Join your local prayer vigil. Get out in front of those abortion clinics. I can't tell you how many I've been part of, and I can't tell you how many I've known that have closed because people were out there praying. You look at the great fruit of it. Abby Johnson's a great convert and is doing so much for life, and so many abortionists and other clinic workers have converted. Lives are being saved. Women are becoming mothers, and we owe a great debt of gratitude to Sean and his wonderful work. Sean, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Good to be back, Drew. Thanks for having me. Wish it was different circumstances.
Oh, I hate it. I really do. It's something else. I mean, let's dive into some of this language here. I mean, abortion is euphemistically defined as the termination of an unwanted pregnancy, which is an act of commission, as we say in Catholic theology. But you know, the Maryland bill will allow that act of omission, the neglect of a newborn child to the point of death. I'd like your take on what we're seeing and how we got to this point where we can move the needle so far. You can kill a child up to 28 days, and you know, you don't even need a doctor to do it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a natural progression, sadly, because America's having to deal with what the Supreme Court did in 1973, which is once again dehumanize an entire segment of the population, and this time not because of the color of their skin, but because of their size and location. And once you do that, you know, of course, all the states can regulate it. You can have an abortion at 16 weeks or 8 weeks or 30 weeks, but you have to play God and constantly move the goal line of who has dignity and how much dignity and why they have dignity state by state. And it is inevitable once you have a law like Roe v. Wade, which allows abortion through 40 weeks, is perfectly legal if a state wants it. Roe v. Wade allows that. which puts us in a category with North Korea, China, Vietnam, and Canada, by the way. Once you do that, you have some states like where I live in Texas, it's heavily regulated. We have the Heartbeat Act, and you have other places like New York and now Maryland who say, yeah, the 28th day after birth, this is what our law allows. And, you know, once you allow abortions through all 40 weeks, why can't you have infanticide? And this is also why, you know, another example that we just don't treat abortion like other medical, legitimate medical procedures. Can you imagine a state outlawing your ability to sue a cardiologist? I mean, the cardiologist can just say, you know, the guy comes in, he eats like garbage. I've told him for 10 years, we're going to open him up and I'm going to end this, and he can't sue me. I mean, it would be outrageous for any other legitimate field of medicine. But this is barbaric. Obviously, it started in 2019. 2019 was the year of infanticide that Governor Cuomo kicked off in January of that year. And we see these states now celebrating infanticide. Half of our politicians think that this is fine. They think we should have abortion through all 40 weeks. And, you know, on our end, on the 40 days for life part, and certainly in the grassroots part of it, it has helped us tremendously. I mean, we've just had droves of new volunteers because you mentioned, and you do, you've gone out regularly to pray at a 40 Days for Life campaign. And not the easiest thing to do, where, right when you start going, a little nerve, you know, it's kind of nerve wracking. But all those people that were like, oh, man, I love the 40 Days for Life, I've just never done it, they've just jumped in. There's just fewer people standing on the fence of actually getting involved in the pro-life movement. And that's a good sign. And all this insanity, this is just garbage out of Maryland. Maryland should be ashamed of themselves. They should be. We should be calling. We should be polite and kind. But we should just say, you know, this is what happens. You have to ignore science. You have to ignore reason. You obviously have to ignore God. And you people have lost it. You know, you're off the reservation. And so I think that the absurdity that the abortion industry is moving forward with is a huge advantage for the pro-life movement and has been since they started all this nonsense in 2019.
Yeah, you're right. My guest today, Sean Carney, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. A few years ago, I remember the former Virginia governor, Ralph Northam, he talked about a bill in the state that, as he said, and I'll quote, he says, you know, the infant would be delivered, the infant would be kept comfortable, the infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physician and the mother, insinuating that the discussion would be about whether or not the child dies. To your point, you're right. This is where abortion leads. Mother Teresa.
Yeah, he didn't advocate for it. He's a pediatrician. And in the creepiest manner anyone could do, I don't know who the producer of that radio show was. They didn't cut him off. He described the process.
I know.
He gave us detail.
It's complete blindness. It's unbelievable. I'll tell you what, stay with me, Sean. We'll take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to join us, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to join the conversation, ask your questions, share your experiences, maybe even some of the fruit that you've had from your 40 days for life, from prayer and fasting. Love to hear those stories, maybe something a little more positive. You can dial in 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Our conversation continues right after this.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Well, welcome back. It is good to be here with you this afternoon. Delighted. You can join us anytime. The number's 888-914-9149. I was talking during the break about what the World Health Organization is telling countries right now. And there is a move throughout the, not just this country, around the world, to issue new abortion guidelines. Thursday, they are urging countries to legalize abortion without limits up to birth and promote what has really been very dangerous telemedicine abortions. And when you talk about extreme, they're calling for no gestational limits on abortion and an end to requirements that only doctors do abortions, right? So that means anybody can do it. No parental consent for minors, no waiting periods. They want to actively promote this, including do-it-yourself abortions by governments. And there was a press release that came out, I think it was the other day that this story came across my radar. And this is true. In several places, the guidelines even mentioned what they call fetal death, an acknowledgement that an unborn baby is a unique living human being who dies in an abortion, making it the opposite of safe, and that's what they're trying to call this. I'm joined today by Sean Carney. He joins us from 40 Days for Life. And Sean, I'd like your take on this. I know this might be a new story to you. It's just came across our radar here at the show the other day. Sean is the president and CEO of 40 Days for Life. Check him out, too, online at 40daysforlife.com. Give me your take on what the World Health Organization is doing. These guidelines, to me, are extreme, to say the least.
They're insane. And, you know, we're unfortunately a little used to this in America because, as we mentioned earlier, we had 2019 and we had politicians, you know, celebrating infanticide. But America's very extreme with abortion. You know, I mentioned those few countries that we're in a category with, North Korea and China. You know, if you picked up France or Italy or Germany and you put them in America, they would be one of the most conservative pro-life states in the union. Wow. You know, so I think when the World Health Organization, which needs to change its name, obviously, it has this suggestion, there's a lot of sticker shock for a lot of countries. You know, you go to Latin America, you go to Africa, we have campaigns throughout South America and Africa. Mm-hmm. They're just sort of, fortunately, they're just coming around to abortion, but unfortunately, they're coming around to it. And the idea of aborting a baby on during the 40th week is crazy to them. So I know the World Health Organization's lost a lot of credibility, but you know, this suggestion is crazy. I don't know who's going to follow it. I don't know how many people how many governments are still listening to them. But as I mentioned earlier, this is what happens. You know, if you can kill a baby at 8 weeks, you can do it at, 10 weeks and then 18 weeks. And you basically go through this pattern of playing God where you're deciding, when can I sleep at night? When can we sleep at night as a country and an abortion happen and a baby die? And that's what the struggle is.
Well, here's the thing. I'm a man of hope. I believe abortion will come to an end in this country. I have no doubt about it.
Right.
I think part of what will facilitate that, and I think it's an absolute necessity to help facilitate that, it's prayer and fasting. We have to pray and we have to fast, especially for this particular intention. The Supreme Court will probably release their decision at the end of June when it comes to a case right now that will determine whether or not Roe v. Wade will be the law of the land anymore. And I personally... Maybe I'm just hopeful, but I'm in the camp that Roe is going to be overturned on the federal level. Of course, we're already seeing states, you know, getting positioned for that and passing their own laws. But what would a post-Roe world look like? And what are your thoughts? I mean, nobody knows how they're going to rule, but I would think based on the composition of the court, based on the fact that Roe was bad law, that we might see something change here. But I'd love your take.
Yeah, I think they're going to overturn it. And I don't think they would have taken the case unless they were going to overturn it. They've rejected a lot of other laws. Yep. And haven't taken cases for pro-life laws that could have overturned Roe. So I'm very optimistic. I do think Roe is going to be gone, and it changes the geography of the abortion battle. 40 Days for Life is in a great position. We've been preparing for this for a number of years to go to these abortion facilities. We're at most of them, but I spoke at the San Diego March for Life, and their mayor had just declared this year that San Diego would be an abortion safe haven. You know, for doctors and abortion businesses to come there. So it doesn't end abortion in America, but it certainly changes the dynamic of it. And you have what's called trigger states that are ready to say, we will have abortion forever, or states like Texas that say abortion is officially illegal at all stages in any form. And so, you know, you'll have a third or half the country, end abortion, and you'll start seeing these facilities pop up on state lines, and that's what we're strategically working at right now. But it's going to be interesting to see, because what is beautiful about this, and I think all this sort of dire news that we're getting, there's no coincidence it comes out during Lent, you know, as the Irish priest always said, cheer up, it's Lent. But this is, it's satanic. It's absolutely satanic, the conversation we're having to deal with. And that is what should really encourage people, because the United States of America has the most extreme abortion laws on earth, and it's going to be illegal at the federal level in a couple of months. And that will send shockwaves around the world, and you're going to have these great Catholic countries who have been told you have to have abortion if you want to be civilized, and all of a sudden they're going to realize we don't have to have this. We can be abortion free.
Yeah, again, I only have a minute left. I'm grateful for what you do. We live in a very dark time, but I'm very hopeful, because light always conquers darkness. Life will conquer death. And I really believe that Roe will be a thing of the past. And then our fight goes to the state level, and we'll get that issue right, too, if we continue to pray and we continue to fast. People want to get connected to your work and what you're doing, and the fruit of it is, I've never seen, there's a lot of pro-life groups out there, and God bless them all, you know. I've never seen the fruit that I've seen from your organization. I think it's, like I said, because of that spiritual component in it. But give me your, if you have about a minute or so left, just final thoughts for those who are listening and ways they can help.
Yeah, well, we have 588 locations. This is the largest Lent campaign we've ever had. Wow. And it's, you know, 588 cities. I kicked off the campaign in Phoenix with Bishop Olmsted. And, you know, there's a lot of momentum. And there's one thing, abortion's legal in states, it's illegal in states. The one thing we've learned by the grace of God is that if you go out and you stand in front of those places and you pray and you offer hope, because nobody wants an abortion, they will close. We've had that happen in California. We've had that happen in New York. We've had that happen in London. And so, you know, we can end abortion in America if we trust God to give us the grace to do so. And that's why prayer and fasting is the foundation of 40 Days for Life, and it's why we have seen him use it.
Hey, Sean, thank you. Keep up your good work, okay? You're always welcome here. I appreciate it. And I see these news reports come across my radar. I want to share them with others so they can join you, join me in praying and fasting and bringing an end to this, as you point out, a demonic attack on life. Hey, keep up your good work. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you, Drew.
That's Sean Carney. He is president and CEO of 40 Days for Life, their website, 40daysforlife.com. And I'd ask you to, if you can, and it's a sacrifice, find out where their 40 Days vigils are in your area. Go outside those abortion clinics and pray. You know, my wife and I would do it. We'd just take an hour, right? And we'd stand outside of the clinic and we'd pray. We'd walk back and forth and we'd pray the rosary. You can pray quietly. You can pray with your spouse. And somebody else will come and relieve you. They have these campaigns are all over the country, and you can see how it's growing. Look, life is going to win in this country. I want you to know that. We can be overwhelmed by the threats of war and by the wokeism that seems to be rising and this confusion over gender and sexuality and the horrific nature of how far the needle is moving when it comes to the dignity of life, the dignity of the human person, you know, just the insanity of it. But that's evil. And evil feeds on itself. Evil always collapses. You look at these empires that have gone before. You know, none of them stand. None of them last forever. I'm not worried about Vladimir Putin. I'm not worried about the culture of death and Planned Parenthood. Good will always conquer. So have faith, okay? Have faith. God is in control of everything. Put your trust in him. And let's do that when I return. Let's pray. Let's pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Let's ask God for this particular intention. For the end of that war, for the end of Roe as we know it, for the conversion of the hearts of those who really are lost, those people who write these pieces of law, people who perform these abortions, they're lost. We need to pray for them.